This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We've invited two legal experts to discuss the Supreme Court's decision ending the Florida recount. A little later, we'll hear from Jeffrey Toobin. He's writing a book on the election aftermath. First, we'll hear from constitutional scholar Cass Sunstein. He's a law professor at the University of Chicago and the author of more than 10 books. The Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that the varying standards that were being applied in the Florida recount violated the equal protection and due process provisions of the Constitution. But two of the dissenting justices thought that this problem could be overcome. A total of 4 justices were willing to let the count continue, but 5 justices said that would be unconstitutional because it would violate yesterday's deadline for states to appoint electors. This morning I asked Cass Sunstein what precedent he thinks this decision sets.
The big precedent is this decision suggests that every recount now, and possibly every state election, is subject to equal protection scrutiny to make sure that everyone's being treated the same. So it puts into the federal constitutional domain a lot of issues that had been thought to be just issues of state law.
So it says that all aspects of voting, is that what you're saying, have to be subject to the Equal Protection Clause?
Yes, everyone had agreed with that. But what hadn't been thought before was that the fact that in a recount or in a vote, some people use some machines, other people use other machines, some people's dimples are counted, some people's aren't. Everyone thought that was an issue of state law, not really a federal constitutional issue. This creates a completely new constitutional avenue for attacking elections.
How might that play out in the future? What might that mean?
Well, it's clear the majority was alert to that and tried to limit the principle by saying all we mean is that when there's a recount proceeding overseen by one state judge, in a case like that, the majority said the Equal Protection Clause comes into play. And that was a clear attempt to narrow the decision and to suggest that it's not going to apply in many other contexts. But it's not easy to explain why this is a one-way ticket, because in many cases, some voters are just treated differently than others in the ballot box and afterwards once recounts are administered.
Well, even within just the state of Florida, there are several different types of voting systems used, optical ballots, the punch ballots. And then throughout the country, there's a lot of variety in what different voting systems are used. So would that be subject now to the Equal Protection Clause? Is the Supreme Court basically saying we have to have one system for everybody on national elections?
These are terrific questions. Justice Ginsburg, evidently alarmed with the majorities creating this new doctrine of equality in voting, raised those questions and said, you can't possibly mean it. The court's most sincere response, I think, is we mean it, but we mean it only in a case in which there's a recount in which one state court judge is presiding. So I think the majority is not prepared to use this new doctrine in lots and lots of areas. If the court were, then it would be embarking on a form of judicial activism that would make the Warren Court itself, a very activist court, pretty embarrassed. So I think we should probably see this as a cobbled-together majority finding some route that they can explain with a straight face without really trying to establish a new doctrine. But they're going to have to backpedal to explain why this is just a one-way ticket.
In other words, why it's just for recounts and not for the first count.
Well, even if it's just for recounts, it's a pretty big deal because recounts are pretty common in close elections. And if every recount has to be administered by specific principles that treat every voter the same way, then the Supreme Court is going to be looking over a lot of recounts. I doubt they want to do that. They tried to limit it more narrowly by saying it's not just any recount, it's a recount that's statewide and that's overseen by one state judge. So that's the court's kind of lawyerly effort to say this is just this case, not others. But as your question suggests, why the case of a recount administered by one state judge that statewide is any different from any other recount, that's not easy to explain.
No, paradoxically, in Texas, the state that George W. Bush is the governor of, they use the punch balloting, at least they do in a good part of the state. And the Texas law says that an indentation on a CHAD that indicates a clearly ascertainable intent of the voter can be counted as a vote. And if the CHAD reflects by other means a clearly ascertainable intent of the voter, it should be counted as a vote. And if there's a disagreement the recount committee chairman makes the decision. That law seems actually pretty consistent with what the Florida State Supreme Court had suggested, which the federal Supreme Court overturned. What happens to something like the Texas law now?
Yeah, the Texas law that Governor Bush signed is in constitutional trouble. Fortunately, he won't be governor of Texas and won't have to defend the law that he signed on constitutional grounds. But what you say is absolutely right. The Texas system is in constitutional jeopardy because of currently Governor Bush's victory in the United States Supreme Court.
What did you find most striking about the majority decision of the Supreme Court?
There were two things that were really interesting and a bit surprising. One was that the line of argument that the Bush people had pushed most enthusiastically, that is the Florida court changed the law, the Supreme Court did not have 5 votes for that position. And that was a major victory, actually, for Vice President Gore, that 5 justices would not sign on to that position. On the other hand, the terrific victory for the Bush lawyers is that they are kind of somewhat bizarre, very innovative argument that in recount proceedings you can't have any arbitrary discrimination, you have to have clear standards. That unprecedented argument, there's really no basis for it in previous decisions. A majority was willing to sign on to that. So a great victory for Gore in stopping the 5 from accepting the main line of argument, a great victory for Bush, and apparently a decisive victory in accepting this more innovative, unusual argument.
Anything you find particularly confusing about the decision?
You know, the confusing point is whether this is a new doctrine just for one day or whether this is a new doctrine for the 21st century. It's unlikely that the 5 most conservative justices on the court want to create a brand new, broad, equal protection voting right, something they've been very reluctant to create for the last 10 years. But the opinion can be taken to have done exactly that. That's why the line of argument that's accepted, this no discrimination in recounts line, actually has much broader legal implications and much more confusing legal implications than anyone expected.
Cass Sunstein, when we spoke at the beginning of the dramatic election aftermath, you said, as did many other constitutional experts, that you thought it was most unlikely that the federal Supreme Court would hear anything about this case because traditionally election law is left to the states to write and to interpret. And the Supreme Court heard 2 cases pertaining to the election aftermath. Why do you think they decided to hear it?
There must be 2 things going on. One is that a majority of the court thought that the issue had such overriding national importance that it was acceptable for the United States Supreme Court to get into a territory that it usually tries to steer clear of. So first, overriding national importance. The second is that 5 justices, I think, thought that something is rotten in the state of Florida. And they were convinced early on, it appears, that Florida was basically trying to change the rules or discriminate or something to steal the election for Vice President Gore. If the justices didn't think something like that, it's very hard to explain this set of outcomes.
Do you think of this decision as being a partisan decision?
It's very hard to accuse justices of being partisan. I guess I'd say that this is the closest thing we've had in memory to the appearance and reality of partisanship. No one should accuse any of the justices of bad faith or of trying to ensure that their man gets in. I'm sure that wasn't going on. But the fact that 5 of them reached out for a new doctrine over 4 dissenting votes to stop counting, it's not partisan, but it's troublesome.
My guest is constitutional scholar Cass Sunstein. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about last night's Supreme Court decision with Cass Sunstein, a law professor at the University of Chicago. If the Florida Supreme Court had set a consistent standard for counting the undervotes, do you think that the appeal to the Supreme Court would have been avoided?
The argument the court accepted would have been answered if the Florida Supreme Court had set out a standard in its own opinion. So the Florida Supreme Court could have done that and avoided at least this ground for being reversed. Here's the trick. If the Florida court had set out specific standards, then it would have been rightly nervous that the Bush people would say the Florida Supreme Court was changing the law. So the Florida Supreme Court was in a terrible catch-22, where if it said what the standards were, it would have been accused of changing the law, and maybe it would have been reversed on that ground. And if it didn't say what the standards were, which is what it chose not to do, then it would be subject to attack in the Supreme Court for not providing equal protection. The Florida Supreme Court's call probably was that it had more to fear from setting out standards and changing the law than it had to fear from just sticking with the law and leaving it vague.
And the law that you're talking about is the Florida state law that says that the vote needs to register the intent of the voter.
Right.
And it doesn't say anything more specific than that, and it seemed to be leaving the interpretation of intent to the individual canvassing boards in the counties.
Right, and what's important to know is that's completely standard. The failure to specify what intent of the voter will mean in cases of dispute, a majority of the states do that.
Well, let me ask you this. If Judge Terry Lewis, who was assigned to come up with the system for a recount in Florida, if he had asked for a specific standard, would that have satisfied the federal Supreme Court?
Absolutely. If anyone in Florida with the authority to set out standards had set out standards, then the Supreme Court of the United States could not do what it did.
So do you think this would have played out differently if Judge Terry Lewis had handled it differently?
Yes, though if Judge Lewis had specified the standard, then the Bush people would be pressing their argument that the Florida courts are changing Florida law. What they'd say is that Florida law says intent of the voter, and now Judge Lewis is changing that by saying some chads count and some ballots don't. And that kind of system would be, they could argue, a change in the law. That argument, interestingly, couldn't get five votes in the court, though maybe if the two justices, O'Connor and Kennedy, who joined the equal protection argument but weren't willing to say Florida courts had changed the law, they might have said that Florida courts had changed the law if that was the only avenue they had.
This must have been a very interesting ride for you, huh?
Yeah, it has been. A little distressing because we didn't expect the Supreme Court to intervene so aggressively, though it may be that this is the simplest way for the constitutional system to get out of this. And it's possible it's the least bad way. The other ways maybe were more legitimate legally, but maybe worse in terms of more chaotic.
Explain what you mean a little bit more.
Okay, maybe the best argument for the court having done what it did is not legal, but more kind of about statesmanship or politics.
Mm-hmm.
And so the argument could be that the court didn't really have a very good legal basis for doing what it did. But if it went the legally sound way and let the Florida system proceed to recount, then we would have had a little bit of a crisis in Florida because the legislature was all set to name its own electors. Then the Florida courts maybe were going to require the governor and the secretary of state to come up with a new slate if it turned out that Gore had more votes after the manual recount. If the governor and secretary of state might refuse to certify, then maybe they'd be held in contempt. Well, this would be really in the nature of a constitutional crisis. We didn't get there. But if the governor and the secretary of state are risking being held in contempt by disobeying the Florida courts, then we have a Florida legislature with their own slate. That's a mess. How's that going to be sorted out in Florida and in Washington? In Washington, Congress would have to sort it out, and then the partisan passions would be inflamed. We might have a Senate that is controlled by one candidate who cast the key vote, Gore, maybe, and a House that's predominantly Republican. And that would be so messy and so procedurally complicated that it probably would be worse than what the Supreme Court did. So what some of the justices might have been thinking is that this is the only way the legal system can get its way out with minimal chaos.
Any other thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I think the court's legitimacy, maybe for the first time in since Roe against Wade, possibly for the first time in many more decades than that, the court's legitimacy is genuinely in some difficulty. I don't think this is going to create civil disobedience and won't have adverse long-term effects for the court, because it really doesn't do this sort of thing often. But the court is going to take a hit from the standpoint of legitimacy. And if the dissenters are right, the court deserves it.
Well, Cass Sunstein, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Cass Sunstein is a law professor at the University of Chicago. His next book, Republic.com, will be published in February.